Thank you, Femi. Yeah, wouldn't you love to be their publicist? So this morning, defense ministry officials in India say that that nation has test-fired a medium-range, supersonic, nuclear-capable missile from a land-based launcher. And the missile, also called the K-15, has an undersea capability with a range up to 435 miles. Yet another reminder that South Asia will be a very big, important priority for the new president, Barack Obama. And as part of our ongoing series, America's Briefing Book, we're going to talk about South Asia from the perspective of Pakistan with M.J. Gohil, who's director of the Asia-Pacific Foundation, a London-based international affairs think tank. And M.J. Gohil is in London. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, John.
Let's begin with some of the rhetoric that was traded in the campaign about Pakistan vis-a-vis, you know, Barack Obama and al-Qaeda and some of the traditional issues that we've been dealing with for quite a while. First, here is Barack Obama.
If Pakistan is unable or unwilling to hunt down bin Laden and take him out, then we should. Now, that, I think, has to be our policy because they are threatening to kill more Americans.
And here's Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari.
Let's see how far we can be the part of the solution, and we can assist Obama to come up, President Obama elect to come up with a world solution to a lot of problems.
M.J. Gohil, between now and inauguration, what are the dividing lines and the tension points between the United States and Pakistan? And we shouldn't forget that often Pakistan is viewed through the war on terror lens, but there's a whole range of issues that relate to Pakistan's relationship with India.
Well, yes, indeed. I think during the next U.S. presidency, Pakistan will prove to be one of the greatest challenges for the new administration, because Pakistan is home to al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The trail from a number of terrorist attacks keeps leading back to Pakistan. A global jihadi infrastructure exists there. And this is a country which has proliferated nuclear technology to countries like North Korea, Iran, and Libya. And this is a country which is teetering on the verge of bankruptcy. So Pakistan is a very, very dangerous country and will prove to be an enormous challenge for President-elect Barack Obama.
And, of course, now there's a new civilian leadership in Pakistan. How different is it going to be, and how much more challenging is it going to be for the U.S. government to deal with a civilian leadership than the more relatively simple Musharraf regime that President Bush had to deal with?
Well, there is a civilian leadership at the moment, but unfortunately, that country's history is such that the army and its notorious intelligence agency, the ISI, are always there in the shadows. For half of this country's life, the military has intervened and usurped democracy there. Now, in fact, Barack Obama has said that he's willing to give more assistance, more U.S. financial aid, if Pakistan maintains a democratic infrastructure. The thing is this, that the military really controls Pakistan, and President Bush put a lot of faith in Pervez Musharraf and his military. Bush gave over $10 billion in aid over the last 7 years, plus debt write-offs, plus military supplies and other covert payments. In return, the Pakistani military did not deliver at any level. Osama bin Laden is still out there. Mullah Omar of the Taliban is there. There's something like 20,000 Taliban fighters milling around in safe havens within Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, the policy towards Pakistan has failed. Pakistan has not delivered. And the question is that, can a civilian government now deliver? It's very unlikely, unless the military, which actually sponsored and nurtured the Taliban, is willing to come on board in this war on terror.
And MJ, there's some real questions about where all those billions of dollars actually went. But in terms of dealing with the army and the civilian government, what do you believe the U.S. needs to do in order for this relationship to work better towards the goal, the U.S.'s goal of getting to al-Qaeda?
Well, Adora, you raise a very important point here. This summer, a U.S. House subcommittee uncovered evidence of graft and corruption in the more than $6 billion worth of U.S. military aid that was given to the Musharraf government. A lot of that money has just gone missing. Nobody knows where it is. And now Pakistan's asking for another $10 billion in aid. The key question here is that there has to be accountability. Money can no longer be just handed over to Pakistan. I think it's going to be very important for Barack Obama and the new administration in the U.S. to demand results for the money that is being given, to demand evidence of where that money is going. Is it being used to reform the country? Is the aid percolating downwards towards the poor sections of the community there? Are the madrasas going to be reformed so that they no longer act as incubation centers for new generations of suicide bombers? And will the money be used to eradicate the global jihadi infrastructure that exists in that country?
But let's be real, though. I mean, people in Pakistan don't necessarily view the payments from the United States as specific, strategically targeted monies to change things inside Pakistan. They view it as a payoff. The U.S. is paying off Pakistan to keep the screws on. And so how the money is used, the Congress can yell and scream about it, but the international community views this as basically a payoff.
Well, I think you're right, John, about that, that it really is basically a payoff. But on the other hand, it's important to win hearts and minds at the grassroots level in Pakistan. The fact is...
Does that argue for a dialogue with the Taliban, as the Bush administration has floated and even the Barack Obama administration has suggested might be possible?
No, I would suggest that that cannot be done. There is no such thing as a moderate Taliban, and that's a non-starter. What I'm saying is that there are a lot of people in Pakistan who don't actually understand fully how generous the U.S. is, and it's important for them to know that. I mean, for instance, when the Pakistani earthquake took place in 2005,
right,
the U.S. and a number of Western countries supplied a massive amount of financial and other aid. Now, all of that aid somehow ended up in the hands of Islamic terrorist groups. Now, these terrorist groups were actually handing out that aid to the earthquake victims right under the noses of the Pakistani military, and in fact, right under the noses of Western media. And as a result of that, those Islamic terrorist groups were establishing more support at the grassroots level, whereas it should be the U.S. that should have got that support.
So better grassroots support and a better sort of U.S. brand on the ground to win those hearts and minds. MJ Gohil, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
MJ Gohil is director of the Asia-Pacific Foundation, a London-based international affairs think tank, with another page in the briefing book, America's briefing book for Barack Obama, that we're putting together.
And John, here on The Takeaway, we've been talking about the troubled auto industry, and there's a lively conversation happening on our website about whether it's a good idea. Elizabeth Knoll writes, instead of bailing them out, spend money on countrywide rail systems, model it on the Eurovail. What do you think should be done about the auto industry and the pain in Detroit? 8778-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. And here's your takeaway.
There aren't really that many financial institutions left which haven't essentially surrendered and said, you know what, we're going to have to be boring bank holding companies.
That's Financial Times. The Financial Times is Christia Freeland. We talked to her about American Express becoming one of those boring companies, too.
We're always on at The Takeaway. And if you missed anything on our program, you can subscribe at our website or on iTunes. I'm John Huckenberry.
I'm Adora Udoji, and this is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.